Yeehaw, trainers, and welcome to Soundproof Podcast. We're back after our regional experience, and as per usual, my name hasn't changed since I last checked. My name is Brendan Lewis. I go by Mr. BDog46 on the internet.
My name, on the other hand, has changed.
Can you tell me what it is, please?
No.
Okay.
I'm in the witness protection.
Then I am joined by my nameless co-host this week, who does go by Major Bowman on the internet, so at least you can find him by that. And if he comes up with a name somewhere during the podcast, I'm sure he'd be more than happy to let you know. But we're back. It was an exciting weekend for both of us. Jake spends more time in Dallas than I do, but we were both there this weekend for the regional. And, of course, the week before that was Bochum. So we're at a very exciting time in the VGC format and in the metagame here.
Yeah, the first couple of regionals of the format are always my favorite. Mm-hmm. Like in 2017, I had the luxury of playing in the first regional in America and the first one in Europe, because that's like I went to Europe right in between the two of them in that new format. So that was super fun. Oh, no, it wasn't the first. Dallas was the second after San Jose. Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
I played in two very early ones, and then I got to go to Dallas this weekend and see some really cool matches there too. So the early format regionals. Always the most fun. That's kind of when we start getting like some developing of trends and archetypes and that kind of thing, generally speaking. And I definitely think we can probably say that happened here in Dallas.
Definitely. And one of the things that I always think about for early format regionals is that it can be chaotic.
Yes.
And I think that there are some elements of that being the case here and there, but I think largely that wasn't the case. And I think that part of that can be attributed to the amount of like online tournaments and meta development that was able to happen, in advance of these actual like big live tournaments. But there was some interesting stuff that popped up, and I think that the format even lends itself to that. So, we'll get into that, a little bit later as we take you through not only 10 teams on the ladder, but two full regionals to of the biggest regionals in modern VGC history, in the entirety of VGC history, the teams that showed up there. So we'll get into both of those things. And then
go ahead.
I'm not done with my intro, Jake.
Oh my God. I'm sorry.
You got to talk this past weekend, okay? Now I have to talk. And then in the second half of our show this week, we are joined by Justin Karras, who is most recently of team building fame, as he was one of the co-architects that contributed to the team that won Dallas Regional, piloted by Aaron Traylor. So we have got some cool things to talk to him about in just a little bit. But as Jake, I'm sure you know what, Jake, you do it. Give us a segue.
I feel.
I know you I wanted can. To,
but first we'll talk about the X15 mods.
So we're on to the Dash 15 mods this week, and my first impression of this group of Pokemon was like, oh my God, this is so much better than last week.
Yeah, we've had some kind of duds recently, but these are all kind of fun.
Yeah. That said, we are on to the water elemental monkeys, so we will have to talk briefly about those, but. The first one is Beedrill, which is a really cool Pokemon, and is a Pokemon that I now very closely relate with Adam Doricott, and it wasn't always that way, but now that he has it on his body, I can't really help but, think about Beedrill.
Hey, and him Adam. And his bug types, man.
It's like, a Durant. It's a weird flex.
Yeah. I don't know, Beedrill's cool, though. It has a really cool design for Mega. I think it's one of the best Megas aesthetically, I would wager, because it's like... It goes from like a bee to like an angry bee, which is perfect.
An angry bee to an even angrier bee.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one of my favorite things about like the design of Mega Beedrill was that they min-maxed it really aggressively, and it really it needed it. Like Beedrill's what is base Beedrill's base stat total like 350 or like something
really
something
bad,
awful like that. Like it needed to be min-maxed, and given what is it, adaptability?
Yes.
To like actually be a bottom tier pick in VGC, but it was at least kind of good in singles, so it's a cool Pokemon. I like Beedrill a lot. Speaking of busted Megas, Kangaskhan is number 115, and obviously it fell from grace a little bit compared with like the all consuming force that it was in 2014, 2015, 2016, and then in 2017 it wasn't around, but then 2018, I don't know. It wasn't as good in the most recent years, but damn, in those first couple of years, like, Power Punch Kang was nuts.
I have like very contentious opinions about Kangaskhan. Mm-hmm. Like this is something I've realized over the years. Like I just never thought it was that good. I don't know. We don't need to get into this right now. Kang is another one that I think is aesthetically fantastic.
Oh yeah, even like the base form.
Yeah, no, I'd love it as a Pokemon. Like, it's a really cool concept. They did really well with like the execution of it. Mm-hmm. Its Mega is not as good as people think it is, but that's a conversation for another time.
I saw this this fan made like Dynamax Kangaskhan thing, where it was just like the mom Kangaskhan in the baby's pouch, and the baby was really big. I thought that was awesome.
Oh my god! No.
Okay. Anyway,
I'm gonna have nightmares about that.
That's why I'm here. Anyway, number 215 is Sneasel, which I think is a really cool Pokemon.
I do too.
I think it's really cool. It's okay. I've had conversations with people about like what my Pokemon aesthetic is, right? And I've been told that my Pokemon aesthetic is cute and dopey, and Sneasel is neither of those things. So it's like it's like unique for me in the sense that I think it's really cool, even though it's not, you know, the kind of Pokemon that I usually gravitate
towards. Oh, you like Pokemon that are cute and dopey?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes. Yes. I don't know. I'd say Sneasel's kind of cute. Like, not. It's definitely not dopey. But like,
no, I wouldn't call it cute.
Wait, Abomasnow isn't dopey.
It's kind of dopey.
Okay, whatever. I don't know. I like Sneasel too. It's a cool mod. Again, another like cool design that I think they did well with, and I like Weavile as well. So fun family.
Sneasel was cool because it was Silver's Pokemon too.
Yeah. I was gonna say Sneasel is one of those Pokemon that is from Gen 2, but you wouldn't really know it because like never shows up in the
game. Can't get it anywhere.
Yeah, like Skarmory. Who knew that Skarmory was a Gen 2 Pokemon?
I did. I think it was that was one of those Pokemon that I like organically discovered, and I thought it was really cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I couldn't have told you that until like Ruby Sapphire.
Yeah, it's way more like, prominent in that game. Yeah. The same with Meryl.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I actually knew Azumarill existed until Gen 3, so I guess same kind of idea. And speaking of Gen 3, Roselia is the Gen 3 Pokemon, so this is how I remember Roselia, is that you encountered it early in the game, like relatively early in the game, and because it didn't have an evolution in Game 3, it gave you a lot of experience points, and that's how I always remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. Roselia's, I think, the Pokemon that I have the most shinies of in Pokemon Go.
That's
the
dupe.
Like that family. Yeah.
I think you told me this.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of like, doesn't having multiple shinies of something kind of like decrease the value? Wouldn't you say?
I mean, yeah.
There you go.
But
but it's cool because they're shiny, so it's kind of like a two-sided thing.
Yeah.
415 is Combee, which I think is the first of. I'm trying to think if it's the first gendered evolution, and it's also like kind of like Salazzle.
Oh, maybe it is.
Where there's like a super small chance of encountering the female one, and that's the only one that can evolve. I remember thinking that was like absolutely infuriating at the time.
Well, I think it's even worse than Salandit, because can't you like only get Combee from the honey trees?
Yeah,
just, like make you wait a day, and like that's so much time that I just don't want to spend
for a garbage evolution too. Like what has Vespiquen done for me lately? Although the unique moves are actually really cool, like Heal Order,
yeah, they Attack are.
Order. Those are neat, but they certainly don't make Vespiquen a good Pokemon.
No.
515 is Panpour.
The worst of the three.
Well, so here's the thing. I feel like all the first stage monkeys, right, are like, there's not like, they're hard to separate from one another. But damn, Simipour is terrible looking.
Wait 2 weeks for that one.
Yeah.
Although if you like cute and dopey, that Panpour might fall into that one.
Yeah, I like cute and dopey, not ugly, Jake. There's a difference.
Wow.
Ugly and disturbing.
You went there.
615 is Cryogonal. Am I pronouncing, is the emphasis in the correct place now?
What I would say.
You need to know these things now.
Cryogonal.
Cryogonal, okay. Was a Pokemon that I really didn't like for a long, long time. And I'll tell you, I recently started to like Cryogonal, and this is because of the Mewtwo event in Pokemon Masters. Now, Cryogonal is the only Pokemon in the entire game that learns Haze, and Mewtwo has like an all stat boost, so you like needed, it was like this terrible, like not even niche, like terrible, like you couldn't use it unit, and then all of a sudden it was meta. So there you go. Bryce is Cryogonal.
I really liked Cryogonal because I really like Bryson in the games. Oh, okay.
That's fair.
I liked Bryson. I really liked Bryson Man from, like, Black and White 2 and, like, the Pokestar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was the avatar I used on Showdown until I got my custom one. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've always kind of liked Bryson as a character, so by proxy, I'm a fan of Cryogonal.
Okay.
I think it's kind of a cool design, like, angry mustache snowflake that kind of spins around. I don't know. I don't really know where I was going with that.
You really didn't describe it as a cool design.
Yeah. I think it looks cool. The way I said it, it sounds
right,
really
that's
stupid.
What I'm saying. Yeah, no, I respect that you think it looks cool, but you certainly didn't do it any justice by, like, verbally describing it.
I'll have to work on that.
Yeah. Number 715 is Noivern, which is a cool Pokemon. We talked a little bit about Noibat and how their design and the way that they function competitively are, like, parallel in a way with, like, mm-hmm. giant, like, noisy bat. Which is neat, and Ash had a Noivern, which was cool. I think I probably talked about this in the last episode too. That whole
battle.
Evolve? Yeah, it was a Noivern.
Okay.
There's the battle in at the end of Gen 6 between Ash and what's the name of the guy with the Mega Charizard?
Alon.
Yeah, they have that really cool, like, 6-on-6 battle, and Noivern mm-hmm. features kind of prominently in that, so I thought that was cool.
I really like when they introduce a Pokemon, like, with a feature that they also showcase. So, like, Noivern, they created, and they gave it, Boom Burst.
Yeah.
Which I think was really cool. It fits perfectly with Cryogonal. Or not Cryogonal, with Noivern.
We're done with Cryogonal, Jake.
I know. It fits perfectly with Noivern thematically, which I enjoyed. And it's also, I'm a big fan of its cry in the game.
Can you make the noise, please?
I could, but I don't want to, one, embarrass myself, and two, like, break people's eardrums.
Okay, that's fair.
Do you know it?
I don't, honestly.
It's, like, obnoxious.
Okay,
but
that's good.
I respect
in
a good way.
Obnoxious, yeah. And then finally, 815 is Cinderace, which we've definitely talked about. I think there's actually, like, relevant news regarding Cinderace now that we know it's going to be getting a Dynamax, and it stands on its giant freaking fiery mountain. It's angry, fiery mountain.
Yeah, Cinderace, like, continues to grow on me. Like, when I first saw the starters, I was, like, vehemently anti Score Bunny,
mm-hmm.
and, like, after the games came out and after I saw Cinderace and, like, you know, I've used it a little bit in DOU. It's kind of cool there, but I think it's cool. It's like a good aesthetic. Like, obviously, it's meant to be a soccer player, which makes sense given the games are in England. And
yep.
They did a good job with that. Although, court change should not be the name of that move because soccer players don't play on the court.
You want to be
that irks me.
Pitch change?
Field change? I don't know.
Pitch change.
There are so many things they could have done.
I got court change. I wonder if that's something that just got lost in translation. That happens a lot.
That's possible, yeah.
I got court change so hard. I, like, gave up a team because of how hard I got court change one time when I was trying to build my latest Abomasnow team, and I was like, okay, it doesn't do any damage. Maybe I can make it use Aurora Veil all the time. And then I got court changed, and I was like, all right, that's it. All right, anyway, that's it for the Dash 15s of this week. A good set, a lot to talk about. I think this is more time than we usually spend on that, but it was fine because they're good Pokemon, and we can cut down, and we get to talk to Simipour next week, or next episode. So we're going to pass on from the Dash 15s to the ladder this week, and how many teams did you pull from?
I think it was closer to 20 this time, so we're starting to get some people that are
regional season.
Yeah, they're getting a little more secretive.
God forbid anybody sees me laddering with Aaron's team on Showdown.
Well, some of them were before. Like, honestly, it could have been. Because
right.
I think Bingji's team
is
on here, too.
Bingji's
team is...
people were talking about, like, five, Durant Milotic players on Showdown, like, in advance of the tournament, too. It was, like, a thing. Anyway, okay. The first team on the ladder is Inteleon, Vanillix, Togekiss, Whimsicott, Snorlax, and Kinkelder. Obviously, Inteleon being the takeaway here, and it can Blizzard, so there's definitely that sort of synergy there. And I think you brought Inteleon up to me, Jake, like, before we started recording, and you were like, Inteleon, mm-hmm. and I was like, dude, the thing does damage. Like, you give it a Life Orb, and it has all those stats, and Snipe Shot is kind of cool, and it learns Airstream. Max Airstream, it gets a flying move anyway. Like it can...
It's Air Slash,
Is that what it is, Air Slash?
Mm-hmm.
It can do a lot if left unchecked.
I keep hearing that, and I have yet to see it, but I hear it from multiple people, so at this point I just kind of believe it.
Yeah.
Like I want to like see it in action. Like it clearly it works, and I feel like on a team like this with Vanillux, it probably does have Blizzard, is my guess. But like I don't know, Snapshot's only base 80, right?
Yeah, it's base 80. Yep.
What's Inteleon's special attack?
It's like 120 something, I think. It's like relatively
okay,
high.
It's not too bad.
It has a
yeah, like it's super fast, which is always good.
It has a 121 stat or something like that.
I think that, I think that's special
that's
attack because its speed isn't the 110.
Speed or special attack?
No, I think its speed is like it's one over.
Oh, okay. So its special
Cinderace.
Attack is 125 and its speed is 120. So it's close. 121.
Okay,
is
and then
like
Cinderace separate. Is like 119, right?
Yeah.
I think it's like one stat fast.
That's cruel, by the way.
I know. That was very intentional.
That's like something they would have done in Red and Blue where you're like, I'll take Cinderace. I'll take Inteleon.
Yeah.
Anyway, Inteleon is a threat. The next team on the ladder is Excadrill, Rotom W, Mimikyu, Sirfetch'd, Goodra, and Togekiss. And if I'm not mistaken, I know you pulled this, but I'm pretty sure this is the same guy that's been laddering with like these exact same six Pokemon since like day one of the format. Because I know he's got Sirfetch'd Goodra, and I think he's running like crit item Sirfetch'd or something like that. Because Leaf Blade is like critting like every time I've watched replays.
Isn't Sirfetch'd signature item crit rate?
Does it just get to use Stick? Or does it have
it's not. It's. I think it's Leak or something.
Oh.
It's not Stick, but it's like the same
okay.
concept.
Okay. Well, then that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's the
Sirfetch'd
only...
is neat though. Like it has Scrappy.
Yep.
I think that's the ability to run, which it doesn't. Scrappy block Intimidate now too.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
If you're it's really slow though, which
close
is kind
combat
of
combat Dusclops. Yeah, it's like 60 or 65 or something like that. Not even slow enough to use in Trick Room. It's just kind of a no man's land. The next team on the ladder is Sableye, Conkeldurr, Arcanine, Whimsicott, Araquanid, and Dracozolt.
That's kind of fun.
It seems almost like a team that kind of like mashed together a whole bunch of flavors of the week. Like Dracozolt and Sableye obviously won Beauchamp, and now Conkeldurr seems to be rising in popularity. So that's kind of cool. But I do like the combination, yeah.
I feel like this might be a Trick Room Whimsicott too. Like
that would make some sense, yeah. Either that or it relies really heavily on Quash or like.
Oh, true. That's a
like,
good point.
Like Araquanid with speed investment or stuff like that.
Yeah. Good point.
The next team is Inteleon number 2 of the week that is accompanied by Grimmsnarl, Togekiss, Arcanine, Conkeldurr, and Glaceon. Glaceon?
This is.
Glaceon?
Glaceon.
Glaceon.
Glaceon. Where's the H?
I don't know.
Oh my god.
Don't make fun of me.
This is cool though. I like.
Fake Tears, like Grimmsnarl, and Inteleon?
Yeah.
Damn.
And Togekiss.
Damn.
And I guess Glaceon too.
Damn.
No, yeah, like Grimmsnarl I think is really cool. We saw it do really well in Dallas. We saw, I think Justin Burns had the highest placing one in top 4.
With Whimsicott?
No, Grimmsnarl.
Oh, Grimmsnarl. Yes, you're correct.
He and Krubaw both had it.
Yep.
I know.
And interestingly enough, Vichy actually had the highest placing Glaceon at 11. There was a Glaceon in top 16.
Yeah.
I forget who I was talking to.
What does it do?
I don't know. I forget who I was talking to about this a couple weeks ago, but I was really... I don't remember what the original thought... I think the original thought process was I was like, okay, Charizard Whimsicott is kind of cool. What are some cool things like that get Weather Ball? And I was like, oh, Glaceon, you give it choice specs, and now you get to use, like, you can you know, Sunny Day and Fire-type Weather Ball, or you can use it with, like, something that has, you know, Rain Dance or some sort of a rain setter, and obviously Water Ice is good coverage. So I think Weather Ball is a neat move. I'm not sure that that's what this player was using, and if I recall, I don't think Vichy was using it either. I'm pretty sure I saw his code go up. But it just
that's
has a lot
neat.
Of like ice types are like the way that people decided they were going to beat Dragapult Togekiss, which is why, you know, Lapras popped up and there was a time when Galarian Darmanitan was kind of rising in popularity. And I think, you know, Glaceon is definitely not the worst of the ice types. So it has a niche.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. And here is Bing G's team at number 5,
yeah.
Durant, Togekiss, Milotic, Conkeldurr, Chandelure, and Whimsicott. Obviously, Durant is terrifying. And I think that we'll start to see, like, Togekiss, Conkeldurr be, like, kind of a thing. Those seem to be, like, a combination of Pokemon that are starting to show up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chandelure, I think is still being slept on a little bit. I think it's good.
It might be, yeah. Chandelier is kind of obnoxious for like the Zard teams popping up. Right. You kind of have to respect it. You can't really just freely heatwave anymore.
Right.
And I think, I believe this, these replays were from before Dallas when I was playing them.
That could be it.
So this might, it might straight up be Bing Ji, or it might just be someone else that was.
I think
the same team,
but... Yihui was using it as well.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it could have been
him too.
Any of that camp.
That team is just terrifying.
Like, it's so scary, and
I didn't expect Durant to be like that good, and then I saw him use it on stream, and I definitely casted him once in top four.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, this Durant is like terrifying.
Right, and I think we were talking to Abe, Seiko on Twitter, who was saying that Rockfall does like even through Chardy Berry, it does like 200%+ damage to G-Max Charizard.
Yeah.
So, like, if you take away the Chardy Berry, it's doing, like, 400% damage to G-Max Charizard.
That's insane.
So it does, like, a nuts amount of damage. And I think we talk about this a little bit more in the second half of the show. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But it's like Hyperovance is always scary to play against, right?
Uh-huh.
And obviously, if you put it into talented hands, it takes on that next level of threatening. So, yeah, Durant's a threat. Dawes, I apologize for, you know, telling you that you're wrong, but anyway, six on the ladder this week, or on our ladder anyway: Tyranitar, Excadrill, Hydreigon, Corviknight, Togekiss, and Snorlax. And this seems to be like the team that's maybe the most out of its time. It seems like a team that you would have seen like a month ago on the ladder.
Yeah, this is definitely like week one good stuffs, or it resembles kind of week one good stuffs.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, this still is a team that, you know, well, it feels like a fundamental kind of team. Like, if you're good at playing, you'll win games with this team.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, it looks like it has tools for pretty much anything, so like, not a bad thing, but definitely like a little bit behind the times, I would say.
Yeah, it needs fake tears somewhere, and then it would be up to speed. The 7 team on the ladder does have a Grimmsnarl that may or may not have fake tears, and it's accompanied by Excadrill, Duraludon, Gyarados, Rotomoe, and Togekiss. So another,
that's a very strange emphasis on the Mo there, Brendan.
More I forget
Mo.
It's because when we were practicing the other night, Joe was like telling everybody that it's not Rotom Cut, it's Rotom Mo, which he's right.
It's just, I know, but I like saying Cut.
No, I think Cut is cool too. But
it's like saying Rotom Spin.
It is. Right.
I think it's technically Fan, but Spin is like the original direct translation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this team is cool. I'm a fan of Rotom.
This is the more modern ghost good stuffs, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's got the Grimmsnarl, which is pretty much all you need.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of resembles the team that Caleb's been using, with he has the Excadrill, Duraludon, and the Grimmsnarl Gyarados modes, and then the other two are different. Like, he has like Caleb had like Whimsicott, Arcanine for the beat up stuff.
But right.
This is like a more balanced, with like a more defensive backbone version.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Like, this definitely could be a good like fake tears Grimmsnarl candidate, because you got the
Duraludon,
Rotom, and Togekiss. So.
Definitely.
Neat team. I like it.
Yeah, definitely good stuffy. At 8 on the ladder, Gothitelle is here alongside good stuff. So it's interesting to see people starting to experiment with Gothitelle a little bit more, and mercifully take it off that gravity hypnosis.
Yeah.
Gothitelle here is alongside Braviary, Excadrill, Hydreigon, Mimikyu, and Rotom Heat. So a pretty familiar cast of customers, but kind of given that extra dimension with Gothitelle.
Yeah, it's neat. I think Gothitelle is a little bit underexplored. It's obviously like Shadow Tag is just broken.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to deny that ability is one of the best in the game, if not the best. Mm. And so I think it got a lot of tools. Like, Fake Out Goth is crazy. You'd like essentially prevent a slot from doing anything because it can't switch.
Mm-hmm.
Or
move. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you fake it out. But I really like Fake Out on like Trick Room with Goth. This feels like a team where it might necessarily not be Trick Room.
Mm hmm.
Which I think like kind of frees it up to do a little bit more, and I think Fake Out and Trick Room on the same set is just kind of wasting time. But
I was gonna say,
again,
I think
that's
you could
kind of another conversation.
Yeah, I think you could argue that like not having Trick Room on Goth is optimal for like it shouldn't exclusively be a Trick Room setter like it has in years
past.
Yeah,
I agree.
Because Fake Out gives it like a whole like another thing to do basically.
Yeah.
Anyway, the 9 team on the ladder, Gothitelle is cool. Is the Dallas winning team with Conkeldurr, Whimsicott, Duraludon, Charizard, Togekiss, and Jellicent. So I'm not sure if this is...
This one was pulled from after.
It was after. Okay, so it's somebody that picked the team up from Aaron's... did he paste it? I don't know if he pasted it.
He did yesterday. Or they interpreted it Wednesday.
Okay, so he did actually paste it and laddered up to the top with it here. I was going to say it was really interesting to be able to pull this because that would mean that, you know, one of Justin, Aaron, or Wolf did not hide their replays, and that kind of seems unlikely if they felt like they had the tournament winning play.
Right.
So there's a lot to be said about that team. Nothing that we can really say that Aaron already hasn't. So if you're interested in the team that won Dallas, definitely pop on over to @TBFUnReality, which is where you'll find a whole report on this team. And we will also talk to Justin about it a little bit. So the 10th team on the ladder, though, we will discuss briefly, which is Indeedee, female. Thank you for specifying. Lucario, Dragapult, Whimsicott, Chandelure, and Rotom Wash.
So there's definitely like beat up on that Whimsicott, you'd imagine.
Vibe, sure.
Possibly on the Dragapult.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Otherwise, it's kind of cool. Like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time like placing different things on this team because there's a lot that could be happening.
Initial thought too. I feel like Whimsicott, Lucario is cool if you just like take two Pokemon and put them aside, but they don't, you know, have a ton of obvious synergy outside of that.
Yeah.
And Indeedee is another.
Does
Pokemon.
Lucario ever have synergy with anything?
Well, I mean, sure. You could definitely make that argument. Lucario is like one of those steel types that isn't a steel type.
Yeah.
And then Indeedee is another thing that like I completely understand what it does, but it's. It's hard to understand its place on a lot of teams, I guess, if that makes any sense, especially when you could be using Togekiss to fulfill a similar role.
Right.
But Indeedee's still good. Psychic Surge is neat. Yeah, and Lucario's there, which does a lot of damage if left unchecked. But again, synergy, like, no. So that's all 10 teams on the ladder. We are spending quite a bit of time talking about some of these teams, but given that this is like one of the most exciting and fast-moving times in the meta, I feel like that's fine. It's not like the end of Ultra Series, which I feel like I talked to a couple people in person about that, where they were like, "Hey, I loved listening to your podcast until you kept talking about Ultra Series." So
yeah,
like that's we're at an exciting time. If you guys are interested in this format, we've got a lot of content for you here. So we'll touch on the regionals here, Jake. Nimbasa City Post. Went above and beyond and pulled top 128 teams from both of these regionals.
That's insane. They pulled 256 teams over the course of a couple
weeks. That's unbelievable.
And like, they're not missing any. They got all of them.
Yeah, so. I mean, like, I think the thing that sticks out most about it is that there are a lot of like new players at these tournaments.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, when we were at certain points in Ultra Series, you could talk to like one person and be able to get like 90% of the teams that were in top 16 or top 32, just because it's all like part of the same network. There are people that, you know, are meeting some of the community for the first time here. So to be able to pull that many teams is impressive.
Yeah. Because there are so many, we're not going to like go too far past.
We're
going to
read out all 256 teams.
Yeah. You can. I will talk to you later.
Yeah. So I think we will at least go through top 8, I think, and then kind of touch on some of the highlights as we go down through 16, 32. And I reserve the right to talk about anything else that I want to. So we'll start with Beauchamp as we go through chronologically. And of course, the winning team did feature a Sableye, which I think is really interesting. We're starting to see pranksters really like kind of take on a life of their own in the format, which is fascinating. Not that they haven't always been good. But the winning team was Mudsdale, Arcanine, Rotom W, Togekiss, Sableye, and Ferrothorn. And I forget who I was talking to, but they said something about like, Beauchamp being the regional of like day one fire, water, grass cores, and it like it makes a lot of sense.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing a few of those.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a cool team. Like, this isn't ever something I would have like looked at like at a first glance and expected to have done well at a tournament, but like seeing it now and like thinking about it, it makes a lot of sense because this team is like, it's super bulky. Like, these are all Pokemon that are generally,
dude, Mudsdale doesn't take damage bulkier. When it's Dynamax. It's ridiculous.
No, yeah. And so, I don't think I could have used a team like this successfully, but clearly it was up Guillermo's alley. And,
it's definitely a team that it looks like you have to slow play a little bit more. And
right.
I think if I remember correctly, he was Snarlark and had, like, one screen on Rotom or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Willow Willow, Sableye, and then obviously Barathorn is like the epitome of slow playing Pokemon.
Ben Irons used this team at Dallas, and he was like the last person to finish most of the rounds.
Yep, he was. I think at least two. I remember two rounds after after I dropped, he was still playing. So that was like two out of three rounds. The runner-up team did have Tyranitar, Arcanine, Rotom Wash, Braviary, Sylveon, and then another Ferrothorn for God knows why. There aren't really any other Ferrothorns after the first and second as I like scroll down, so at least most people have the right idea. but I've said this like every week on the podcast. I still think that Sylveon is being slept on.
Oh, I do too. Like, I think most of that is people just not really knowing how to run it yet.
Yeah.
And once like someone comes up with like the set, then everyone's gonna start.
Well, I think that Mystical Fire was just like an unreal buff to it.
Yeah, definitely. Like Tyranitar without Excadrill is kind of a new, obviously, but like new to this format. Because we had been seeing a lot of Excadrill without Tyranitar, but never solo Sandsetter.
Right.
And so, as a large fan of Tyranitar, one might even call me a stan of Tyranitar. Mm-hmm. I am very excited to see it doing well. I do think it fits on this kind of team too. It kind of has some pretty good synergy with a lot of the Pokemon on it. So
yeah, I think
it's a cool team.
The thing that kind of confuses me about it is it seems like kind of the Pokemon that you'd want to be Dynamaxing the most, and I feel like that's, you know, arguably one of Tyranitar's worst traits is like a Dynamaxer because of the lack of synergy that it has with, you know, its max moves. Where like if you want to use Max Darkness, well, you're primarily a physical attacker. You want to use Max Rockfall, well, the sand is already up. You know, kind of things of that nature. But obviously, like, it already has such ridiculous stats that by doubling its HP, you're going to, you know, have a good time. But
it has access to, like, Max Quake.
That's a really good one. Max Knuckle.
You could run Steel Spike if you really want
to. I don't know why you wouldn't just use something else, but you certainly could.
Yeah.
The third place team here is a team that apparently is well known in talking to some of the people on Monarchs during the tournament, I think, that's like a Surf Spam team. That features Pelipper, Ludicolo, Jellicent, Togekiss, Gastrodon, and Conkeldurr. So obviously, at least two of those Pokemon, if not more, are running Surf, with the idea being like Water Absorb Jellicent, Storm Drain Gastrodon, Ludicolo doesn't take damage from Water-type attacks, stuff like that.
Do you know the gimmick with the Jellicent on this team?
Do I want to?
It was Sludge Wave.
Oh, I did know that.
And with the weakness policy Togekiss. I
did know that.
It was so funny. I saw him play on stream, and I saw him pop that, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing.
I theoried that with Abomasnow, and people told me that I needed to like, turn my computer off and things of that nature. It never even made it into the builder. the fourth and fifth place teams, I believe, are the exact same pace as these players were, you know, part of the same team building group, but it is the team that I alluded to a little bit that features Gothitelle and Gravity Hypnosis nonsense with, what is that called? Torkoal, Rhyperior, Togekiss, Gothitelle, Dusclops, and Gyarados. And this team was definitely on stream a couple times, and if you really want to see some slow, painful games, I highly recommend these VODs.
That's the thing with like Gothitelle Dusclops is like you can fake out Trick Room and then Gravity Hypnosis, but the games do go incredibly slowly just because those two have zero offense. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to get the Trick Room going, you gotta get the Hypnosis going, and then you can like try to switch something in, hope for not one turn sleeps, and then try to click some eruptions or like break earthquakes or something like that.
Right.
Which, and when it works, I'm sure it's like entirely impossible to like have a positive matchup against.
Well, if you get two turn sleeps, like the game's over.
Right.
is kind of the way that it functions. But, you know, it's like you can mitigate it in some respects, you know, using Max Starfall or, you know, Max Lightning or something like that.
Or Galarian Weezing.
I thought it was funny, though, because I think it happened on stream where Togekiss used Max Starfall, but it's also still in the air. So it was like taking Blind Hypnosis. But yeah, definitely like undeniably a strong team, but like awful to watch happen.
Right.
The sixth place team was Jonathan Marston, who went so far as to use Excadrill and a different sand setter, not Tyranitar. He does have Hippowdon there alongside Lapras, Chandelure, Indeedee, and Dragapult. Anything to say about that one, Jake?
I don't know. I don't know why the hippo is there.
Yeah, I saw his code. I'd have to go back and look at exactly what it does, but
Yeah.
I don't know. Ground.
I also kind of think Lapras really without GMAX seems like super underwhelming.
I think it's pretty good. They're like it's like a weird, like it's like it's the things that it does are so unique that it has like super good matchups against just like random stuff, and if you run into that stuff, then you know it more than pulls its weight. Like freeze dry being such a good.
That's fair. Yeah.
Rounding out top eight, we have the seventh place team piloted by Eduardo Cunha. I think this is a team that's pretty well known. From I think like
didn't he win at Galar Weekly with
I believe so. He's got Whimsicott, Corviknight, Gastrodon, Rotom Heat, Scrafty, and Dragapult.
This also kind of seems like a week one good stuff team.
I was thinking the same thing.
And I think it kind of is. You know, it's the team he'd been using for at least a couple of weeks before this tournament. He is someone that will like build a team and like stick by it no matter what.
Yeah.
That's definitely just something that he does or he has done over the last few formats or so. And clearly that model works for him. Like he's always, you know, been one in person to like build a team and perfect it over the course of a format.
Yeah. He's one of those players that just kind of like, I guess defines good stuffs is what I would say. Like he's using Pokemon and like the combinations that and moves that he selects tend to like become pretty prominent in the meta.
Right.
Because he's such a good player and a good builder. And the final team in top eight was a team of Arcanine, Braviary, Gastrodon, Rotom Moe, Dracozolt, and Grimmsnarl. So another kind of like common six. Well, I guess Dracozolt's relatively common.
It's like fringe
definitely
common.
Threatening. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Dracozolt is like the ultimate. If you hit your moves, you win Pokemon.
Definitely. I think
like Bolt Beak is crazy strong, but
I was just gonna say that it, I think like this is interesting. I think it's the first time that I've ever seen Dracozolt alongside another electric type. So you could theoretically like max lightning and then be using your own boosted Bolt Beaks like on the same turn.
True, yeah, it's so a good
interesting.
Point.
And we'll kinda just talk about some of the things that, you know, were going on in top 16, top 32. One of those Surf Colossal teams actually made it into top 16, even though, you know, you would expect everybody knew it was happening. Maybe this particular player, Pablo Hernandez Teo, just, you know, had such an intimate knowledge of all the matchups that Surf Dragapult Colossal has with other players, or maybe, you know,
I was going to say, that's probably, I usually see it with Weavile, but I guess Dragapult learns Surf too, right?
I think it
that's
was Dragapult it before it was Weavile, was it not?
Oh, really?
I don't know, maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. but another thing that I think, you know, at least early on in the stream, people thought that, you know, these Vanillix teams were going to be the ones that, you know, made a splash. And there were two in top 16 piloted by Alexandra. I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. Quikiel, and then Flavio Delpedio, who is, you know, a phenomenal player. We're both using their own, you know, Vanillix teams. And I think this is kind of... Beauchamp like thrust Vanillix into the spotlight a little bit.
Yeah, Vanillix I think it's pretty cool. Like it has a lot of cool
stuff.
Tools.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them are like similar, like Freeze Dry, Blizzard, Aurora Veil, all kind of things that ice types do, but it also has I just lost my train of thought. That's unfortunate. Aurora Veil is the main one.
Yeah,
like,
so it also
Aurora
does.
Veil's broken.
It also does things, and one of these things I learned just this past weekend. It I think on stream in Beauchamp it was doing Ice Shard weakness policy stuff.
I think
Alexandra had a weakness policy Dragapult, and Pato had weakness policy Togekiss. So it does that.
Yeah.
Where you can like set up Aurora Veil and then Ice Shard yourself, or just Ice Shard yourself and do a lot of damage. but also it learns Beat Up.
That's what I was going to say.
It learns Beat Up, and I guess, who was it, Cody Kirk that was running that this weekend? And,
yeah.
Like, beating up their Arcanine with Vanillix. I think that's awesome.
that's
cool. Like, I had no idea, like, why would it get that?
I literally would not have known.
But apparently it does. Look out for that. You're welcome. It does do that thing. And then, let's see, what do we have going on in top 32 here? We did see Inteleon, Silvally on stream one time, so pledges like are a thing. Keep in mind, it quarters your speed. It's old Thunder Wave. This is a public service announcement from Soundproof. Water plus grass pledge quarters your speed. Quarters. Make sure you know those calcs.
And it affects flying types, too.
It does.
You don't have to be grounded. All right, moving on to Dallas, the one that was in America this past weekend. First American regional in the format, following only Bochum. Winning that tournament was Aaron Traylor, coming out on top of like 500 plus people, which is crazy.
Unbelievable.
Using that team of that G-Max Charizard, which, like, if you told me before the tournament G-Max Charizard would have won over something like just regular Dynamax, like Solar Power Charizard, I would have told you you're stupid.
Yeah, no, I would have. Absolutely.
But, like, Aaron and Wolf and Justin had some different opinions, obviously.
Also, I don't
worked
know,
out for them.
I don't know if this is common knowledge, but I'm told that it's actually not implemented correctly on Showdown. On Showdown, G-Max Wildfire only persists for 3 turns, when in reality, it's 4. So that, like, is a whole extra 1/6 of damage.
So another soundproof PSA there.
There you go. We're just, like, helping people left and right here. Anyway.
Saving lives here.
Yeah, so if you want to check that team out, there's obviously a report out. We'll talk to Justin a little bit about it. I think I already made that announcement. With the second place piloted by Bing G, we did mention on the ladder, but it is that Durant, Whimsicott, Chandelure, Conkeldurr, Togekiss, and Milotic, and Durant is terrifying, dude. Like, I don't think I even gave it enough credit until I watched it just, like, steal souls on stream. Like, poor Andy.
Yeah. I know. Like, that was hard to watch. Andy had, like, the crazy game, too, when he had, like, the G-Max Butterfree come out and sleep everything.
That was disgusting.
But even, like, even getting those sleep rolls, like, Bing G almost won that game.
Yeah, he like, would have won that game if he'd targeted the Rockfall.
I know, yeah. So it was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, Durant, especially against teams that don't have Intimidate and like don't have something faster than Durant, like Andrews,
yep.
Like, that's just terrifying.
Yeah, you can't stop it from attacking at least once, right? And even if you want to, like, make Togekiss the thing that takes the attack, it's going to get knocked out by a Steel Spike, probably through Babiri Berry, and also by Rockfall, even if it's not. So, like, a really scary Pokemon. The third place team was, as we alluded to, piloted by Andrew Burley. It was a team of Solar Power Charizard with Whimsicott, Bronzong, Rhyperior, Butterfree, and Duraludon.
This is kind of like what I expect from Charizard-y kind of teams now. Like,
with the exception of Butterfree,
they're all gonna have,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. They're all going to have Whimsicott.
Yep.
Ground type makes a lot of sense with those two, and Rhyperior is a very good ground type, and Rhyperior likes Trick Room, so you're probably going to use a Trick Room setter as her Bronzong comes in. And then Duraludon, Butterfree kind of rounds it out. I like this team a lot. It's definitely up Andrew's alley. He likes these teams with multiple modes and, like, teams that can dish out a lot of offense pretty quickly. And this is Tommy's team.
Yep.
He was also using too. So, again, someone that loves those fast offense modes.
And he also gave us one of the all-time great stream moments, I think.
Yeah.
That Befuddle game was just unbelievable.
Oh, my God. That was amazing.
The fourth place team, piloted by Justin Burns, was a team of Arcanine, Grimmsnarl, Bronzong, Rhyperior, Togekiss, and Dragapult. So, you know, I talked about this as it pertained to Adu, but Justin definitely, like, somebody that you'll find running good stuff teams as well, and I think this is a perfect example of it.
Yeah, I like it. You know, this is Fake Tears Grimmsnarl we've been talking about already.
I didn't even know it got that until this weekend.
Yeah. but with Dragapult and Togekiss, the main special attackers on that team, those are both things that, like, hit hard, but, like, not super hard, which makes them, like, perfect Fake Tears partners, because you can pick up KOs you definitely couldn't have before with them.
Definitely. The fifth place team, piloted by Justin Ramirez, is Whimsicott, Mimikyu, Conkeldurr, Rhyperior, Dragapult, and Duraludon. So this is one, you know, definitely has a little bit different of a Trick Room mode than the other teams, but definitely featured there with that Mimikyu.
Yeah, it's cool. Mimikyu is an interesting Pokemon now. It definitely, like, isn't as good as it was before because they did nerf Disguise a little bit.
Yep.
But still usable, and it, like, it's unique in that it's a Trick Room one that can function really well outside it because it is pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see you bringing Mimikyu a lot with this team and, like, clicking Trick Room less often. So I like the flexibility that it provides. And then obviously we've seen the rise of Conkeldurr in this tournament, and we know that Rhyperior is a really good one. So cool stuff there too.
Definitely. At 6 was Justin Krubaugh with a team very similar to Justin Burns, but it was with Arcanine, Grimmsnarl, Gastrodon, Mudsdale, Togekiss, and Duraludon. So a lot of overlap there as far as roles and Pokemon. And I think the Grimmsnarl, I'm pretty sure they had the same set.
I think so, yeah. I'm kind of surprised to see Gastrodon and Mudsdale. Like, I feel like they both do very similar things.
Well, one of,
and on a team like
one of the two does damage.
True. Yeah. But like, I don't know. I guess Gastrodon works here. You can protect them as well from water type moves. Mm-hmm. This team isn't like overly weak to water, so I don't know if Gastrodon really fits super well there. Mm-hmm. But it's like an okay mon now. It might be the best it's ever been, which doesn't really say much.
I was gonna say, like, that's not a grand statement. Seven was Ryan Chambers, who was running a team of Excadrill, Tyranitar, Scrafty, Braviary, Rotom, Mo, and Jellicent. So this is like the first five make me think week one, and then Jellicent is kind of smacked on there at the end, which is arguably one of the better Pokemon in the metagame right now.
Yeah, it's a cool team. I like how Jellicent gives it a different mode. Mm-hmm. You got some slow stuff there that can abuse Trick Room.
Yeah, I mean, T-Tar in Trick Room has always like been a thing. It's never like a hard Trick Room feature, but it on good stuffs teams like this, definitely, you know, is mm-hmm. a threat in its own right. And then finally, rounding out top eight is Jake Skurchak, who was running a team of Arcanine, Rotom Wash, Sylveon, Ferrothorn, Mandibuzz, and Dragapult. Mandibuzz is an interesting Pokemon. It didn't lose Tailwind in this generation, did it? It kept it.
No, okay. It still has Tailwind. Okay. Yeah. I think I want to say this is a team he got from someone that did well in like a Galar Weekly.
Looks familiar.
I know he credited the person that built it on Twitter after the tournament. Mm-hmm. It's neat though. This is like a pretty good team for Sylveon. I think you have the Mandibuzz to set it up with Tailwind.
Yep, and Arcanine supports it incredibly well.
Yeah, definitely. And I really like Dragapult on teams like this because the first five are kind of slow, on like the bulkier end. But then Dragapult's really fast and can get you like that immediate damage you need. So kind of cool comp here.
All right. And that's the round out for top eight. Some highlights. I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show is Vichy at number 11 does have a Glaceon and also a Haxorus, which is a team like kind of an interesting Pokemon because it is one of those things that gets Max Quake and Max Steel Spike. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's the optimal use of it, I don't know. But it does do a lot of damage if left unchecked. And then the other thing that I definitely wanted to highlight from this top 16 is the combination of Indeedee Reuniclus, which is something that I had heard a little bit about going into the tournament, and then Alberto went and took it to 12th place without Dynamax candies.
That's the funniest part. Yeah. Anything, I don't know if he just didn't know he needed to or just forgot to or didn't have them or something, but I think he said Rotom was the only Pokemon on the team that was Dynamax candied.
Right.
He didn't Dynamax it very often either.
Right. So. I was going to say Reuniclus seems like the Pokemon that you'd want to be Dynamaxing there.
This is cool though. We saw Reuniclus and Indeedee on stream.
Yeah, I guess is.
Yeah, one round. And I believe Kareem maxed the Reuniclus all three games of that set. So super strong, you know, max Mindstorms and Psychic Drain, nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, I think I think that's something that's probably going to be relevant, you know, as we go down the line here a little bit more. Although he did have the best placement, I think there were other people running it that I heard at least. Like you said, Kareem had it. So look out for that. Psy Spam again, like still is a thing. And you just have to find your Psychic types to use. All right, so that's going to wrap up our somewhat lengthy discussion about where we're at in the metagame here. Obviously, these could be the two most important regionals and two biggest regionals of the format. So, I'm not sad that we took the time to talk about them. Obviously, we had some better Dash 15 mons this week, which was merciful after the 14s. Holy moly.
I know.
But we are going to take our brief break now so you can, you know, take a break from our voices, get a couple seconds of music. And then when we are back, we will be joined by Justin Karras to have a discussion about things like tournament prep, the creation of his Dallas team, and even some fighting game crossover discussion. So look forward to that. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back, trainers, to Soundproof, a podcast brought to you by Jake Muller and Brendan Lewis. And we are now joined by Justin Karras, who goes by Azazel or Azazel the God. I believe on Twitter, Justin, you can feel free to correct me there. And welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me, guys. And yes, I do go by Azazel the God on Twitter, and it's mainly a showdown thing. It was one of those situations where, you know, Azazel was already taken, so I had to add.
Oh, so you got to switch it up.
I had to add some type of flair, and
Obviously. I hear the cool kids just add underscores.
Yeah, basically what happened. So.
I heard the opposite, actually.
You're probably right.
I don't know any cool kids, so I don't get tips on that stuff.
Oh. Definitely not Jake, but...
No.
Jake, do you want to introduce Justin real quick?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Justin Karras, a New Jersey player, been around for a few years now. Biggest result, huge result, really, top 8 in Worlds in 2016. And then it's gone on to cut a few regionals after that. But that was definitely like his breakout performance. And I think, you know, I know we knew each other before that, Justin, but I imagine a lot of people didn't really know who you were, and you kind of burst onto the scene from there.
Yeah, I definitely had my little...
Wait, rain on the parade, Jake. Jeez.
I had my little spot in the community. I was always known as like kind of like a local threat in like New York area, New Jersey area. Mm-hmm. But I definitely had never been able to perform at any type of regional or national level. Partially, I mean... I was very new at the time. I mean, I only played like one full season before 2016 really even started. And also, I just never really had like the mental strength to really stick to it at a regional like any real methods to, you know, prepare or team build. I was kind of just, you know, like a wild, it kind of felt like the wild, wild west to me where it's like, you know, I'm, you know, just slinging what I can out there. I didn't have any fundamentals yet. And thank God I ended up, you know, being raised in the New York and New Jersey scene, because that's the place where you learn how to play the game, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially back in that era when, you know, all the people that we know from that, you know, kind of like the old heads from like the New York area were still coming out to tournaments. And those are some of the biggest locals we've ever had in the scene. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it was super difficult coming up in that, I'm guessing, but it's obviously a great learning experience as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like back then, you know, Aaron Zeng was at our locals, you know, James Beck, that was, I mean, Josh Lorsey, Chapel Cross, so, and that's just like, you know, some of the easier players, I should say.
Wow.
I didn't think we were going to get a call out so early on in the show, but here we are. So Justin, you actually, you know, gave me a better segue that I could have possibly come up with myself. Yeah. So you're talking a little bit about, you know, the way that over the years you did kind of, you know, develop you know preparation strategies and practice strategies that weren't always present. So do you want to talk about kind of, you know, what specifically developed for you, where things started, and then where we ended up now, which is obviously at a pretty high peak after you were one of the players that contributed to the team that just won Dallas?
Yeah, so it was more of a refining process than it was like any type of development. I'd always had a way of you know, preparing teams. It just, they were, I was very bad and disorganized, and admittedly, I actually have ADHD, and because of that, like, my life has kind of revolved around figuring out how to organize my own chaotic lifestyle, so, and the way that my brain works. So I actually have a lot to thank with VGC in that regard, and that I've learned to, you know, put stuff into spreadsheets and put stuff into Google Docs and notebooks. But the main thing was really just, you know, throwing myself at ladder and learning and learning and learning and learning, and then just like kind of almost like muscle memory, like you know, applying different leads and end games and flow charts. And once I had that like stuff built up in my head, it was about, you know, putting it down on paper. And as time has gone on and I've gotten a little bit busier, I haven't been able to just, you know, spam ladder the way I used to. Mm-hmm. So having access to, you know, OneNote, which is a Microsoft program. It's like a cloud notebook that you can store a bunch of notes in and organize very efficiently. And Google Spreadsheets has those two tools specifically have really helped me to up my game. I keep tons of damage calculations in there, flow charts. And I actually like, I tend to like rank Pokemon by their like proficiency and their regard. So if something is a, you know, a very good intimidator, what makes it a good intimidator? What do I want from it? Like in the beginning of the format, you know, you lean towards Arcanine in that regard, but you have to classify what makes it better than the other Intimidators. And it's like, well, what do you want to drop an Intimidate on? It's like, well, Excadrill, Tyranitar. So does that really do the job better than something like Hitmontop, which actually resists those Pokemon rather than, you know, being weak to them? And that applies to tons of different stuff like Trick Room setters and Fake Out abusers and Tailwind setters and, you know, tons of other things. But in terms of refining the process, what really, really helped me was, you know, finding a way to get organized. And like, you know, as you come into your own as a player, having a really good feel for what you want to accomplish in each match will really lend itself to your preparation. So being able to identify, oh, I want to make, you know, really hard callouts, or I want to have like a very suffocating game plan or a really strong end game, will really just make those flowcharts a lot better and will really let you tap into the potential of Pokemon that you want to use.
That's really interesting. I feel like that's something a lot of people just keep in their heads. Like, you know, taking the Intimidate example, like Arcanine seems to be kind of a go-to in these kind of limited decks formats, but obviously Hitmontop, like you said, better against some different things. And it's like, I just kind of remember that, or like I know that if I'm looking at a team and I think, oh, it's like super weak to Tyranitar, I would probably want Hitmontop over Arcanine there. But I kind of like the idea of like writing out reasons that these different Pokemon that fill the same role might be better on a certain team than another or something. So,
and just to add on to that, I think that when working in a team with, you know, Wolf and Aaron, that ended up being like a huge asset, not just to me, but to them, because I had all that stuff like pre-organized and we could just, mm-hmm. you know, kind of cover bases that I had already spent time theorizing. And it just, I think it just really lended to, you know, making us more efficient and not wasting time on specific stuff.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I think Jake kind of touched on it a little bit, but so much of the thought process that you just laid out are things that like I'm sure any number of players in the community, like, they do, you know what you just said, but it's so subconscious and so mm-hmm. automatic that you take away some of the benefits of really being able to like take a step back from everything. And in this case for you, it's like putting it down on paper or putting it into a spreadsheet or something like that, and there's some benefit and definitely lends itself to the efficiency where you're relying on things that are directly in front of you and not necessarily on, you know, assuming that you have an exhaustive knowledge of what's going on.
Another thing is just that, like, kind of identifying that my preparation, like, I mean, it maybe it's egotistical to say, but I feel like my preparation exceeds that of everything else. Like, in terms of like, mm-hmm. when I'm playing against an opponent, I have to believe that I'm way more prepared. I have to believe that I've been in this scenario more times. And I have to, I just have to feel that way. And that really just mm-hmm. makes like my execution a lot better. And I think specifically, like, yeah, having it in your head is great. Like, and I think that any good, like, I've played at Worlds without a notebook, and I've played at Worlds without like damage calculations, you know, to a T, but, and I've performed okay in those scenarios, and I've performed well. I've won, you know, large mid seasons and stuff like that without that type of preparation. But when it comes to, you know, trying to really make a big statement, you know, we treated Dallas incredibly seriously. And, you know, having that physical, that tangible, this is what I want to do in this situation, to always just go over, mm-hmm. you get to look over it in the plane, you get to look at it between rounds, rather than just like, I think I know what I'm going to do in this situation, or, you know, 90% of the time, it kind of gives you that extra 10%. So that you're, or even maybe 20%. So like where you're like really playing above your potential even.
I think one thing that I mentioned, you know, before we started recording when I was talking to you earlier today, is that I think we have different perspectives on prep stuff. And one of the main things one of the main ways we differ, I think, is that I remember before, maybe like during 2016 Worlds at some point, you just mentioned that you had like 1,000 games or so with the team that you brought to that tournament. And that like blew my mind at the time. Like at that point, and like still to this day, really, that's just not really how I operate. Like, I can't, like, sit down and play, you know, hundreds of games on end with the same team, because I'll just get bored. And at a certain point, to me, I accept, like, okay, I've played enough. I know generally how to play certain matchups. And, you know, if I find something I haven't faced, I can probably figure it out on the fly. Whereas I think, I guess, your goal in playing those, you know, many, many, many games on end would imagine to be, like, knowing how to play these matchups from experience rather than just by theory, which I think is one of the main ways that we differ. And like, clearly it works for you. So.
I'm kind of trying to like it knit to like being in the gym. Like when you lift a little bit lighter, but you have better form and you can do more mm-hmm. reps. So like, yeah, I think that if you saw the gym as, you know, just what it was, going and pushing things upwards and maybe pulling things backwards, it can be really monotonous and boring. But when you focus on the form of it, and you kind of like have that like mind to muscle connection of like what you're trying to accomplish with each lift and each repetition, even in, you know, a game of Pokemon on ladder or even on a battle spot ladder, it really makes it, it amplifies your ability to learn from it. And it's kind of like that, you know, that Bruce Lee quote where it's like, I fear the man that has practiced the same kick 10,000 times than somebody who's practiced 10,000 different kicks. I think specifically, like, though, like where that really started for me was like Smeargle Xerneas, because I felt like 2016 like was so you have to play the game this way if your opponent is gonna have access to these tools. I think Smeargle in general does that to the game, and thank goodness that thing is gone. At least for now.
Stop it.
But instead of trying to build, you know, like four different move slots onto my team, or like two items on my team that could counter Dark Void or a Smeargle Xerneas lead, I wanted to learn how to play against every type of Smeargle Xerneas player and how they led. So I practiced with it myself and saw like all the weaknesses and everything I could. And then I flowcharted it and I theorized it. And I kind of like, you know, made it so it's like, what is the value out of this turn if I mess up based off of their play? Or what is the value I can, you know, get, and how do I, like, you know, keep on doubling down and exponentially getting it better? And it's crazy that I did all that prep. I had to have played at least 500 just, you know, Zern Smeargle lead mirrors. Or at least Infernape Xerneas into Smeargle Xerneas leads in my practice to Worlds for 2016. And the last round of day one was against Nikolai Zelinsky. And sure enough, he led Smeargle Xerneas into my Infernape Xerneas, and it came down to game three if I get that turn right. And like literally it was the amalgamation of every Smeargle Xerneas ladder game I had ever played in my life.
It's all led up to this.
And I got the turn like so perfectly right, and I won. I like that I could not lose the game out off of turn one, and I'll never forget it because I was terrified. I never played and day two of Worlds, I never cut a regional at that point. And I'm playing against Nikolai Zelinsky, you know, a former world champion in seniors division, somebody who's gotten top four at numerous regionals, and somebody who had personally been told to me as the only impressive player they'd ever played against in their life by an unnamed player. I won't name them because I don't want to call them out like that. But
drag them.
But it's somebody whose opinion I really respect. And he had told me, he's like, I played Nikolai, and holy cow, he destroyed me. It's like the most, you know, dominant win I've ever had to experience in my life. So, I mean, that was like kind of reverberating in my head as I played against him for you know, my winning in.
Yeah.
So Justin, one of the things that Jake and I had kind of been talking about as part of our like lead up to, you know, tournament prep was that you specifically, you know, spent a decent amount of time away from VGC playing a different game entirely, and a lot of the time that you had spent putting into VGC was something else entirely. So that said, that you stepped away from the game for such a long time, do you feel like a lot of it, like you retained a lot of the skills that you had picked up previously, or did it slip away and you had to, you know, sharpen everything back up from a pretty low level, or what was your experience with coming back to the game?
All right, so I'm gonna have to I'm kind of gonna have to develop the answer to this by thinking about it out loud. The first real tournament that I had back was I actually played in the DC Open in 2019 Worlds, and I didn't really have too much preparation. I had literally admittedly built a team the day before the tournament on a phone call down to DC with Justin Ramirez. Like, we were just, you know, talking and trying to think of ways to counter the meta. And we were just trying to make a meta call, and I was just going to go have fun. Like, I was mainly there just so I could have a good time. I literally drove down just so I could hang out with people and play in the DC Open. I had no expectations. and I ended up building the exact same team that ended up getting top eight. The Australian player, I forget her name, unfortunately.
Megan Rattle,
yeah. And she had that Xerneas. Okay. She had the Yveltal, Amoongus, Metagross, Tapu Koko, Incineroar. I forget the last one. I can't think of it. Kyogre.
Yeah, Kyogre.
Oh, duh,
that team. Yeah. yeah, you know, just not an important Pokemon. And I ended up going 6-3. What's really sad about that is that I lost to the eventual winner, Jeremy Odena, and Chris Danzo, and Will Marks. I lost to Will Marks. He really outplayed me. I'll throw props to him. That was a really good set. But Chris and Jeremy were people I was rooming with, and I was the one telling them about the team the day before. So it's like I had no surprise factor, even though I built the team the day before, and it was really just that was so annoying to have to play them right away. But regardless, that tournament kind of showed me, like, I still got it. Like, I went 6-3, like, kind of, you know, winging it at an invitational form, the open format. And not in, like, a, you know, any air of arrogance there. It was just like, oh, the plays that I'm making, I was happy about. I felt like I ran into so many Xerneas and still outplayed them. And the team kind of, I was calling matchups and I didn't get them. So I feel like I played a lot of bad matchups and went 6-3. It's just okay. So I remembered that, you know, Pokemon can be really fun as long as, you know, you aren't getting RNG'd to hell and back. But that made me think, you know, coming back to the game was something that I've kind of always thought, you know, if the game is fun and I want to enjoy it, I will. And there are two things. One, I'll get to the question about, you know, going to Smash first, and then I'll go to the second part of that, which is why I actually came back in general. The sabbatical to Smash was fun, but I actually really enjoy Smash Ultimate. Learning a fighting game was a great experience, and I do think that if I was maybe in high school and had more time, and maybe had a little bit more experience in Smash prior to going into Ultimate, I'd be fine, and I think I could actually really excel in that game. But there's such a high execution barrier, and there is a wealth of knowledge that you can never forget in a split second. Where there's you know, a 45-second timer in VGC.
Frame data.
And it's not even it's frame data, but it's also like really weird things like stage positioning and how you're supposed to, like, what distance you're supposed to play from your opponent. And there's so many matchups.
Are you saying I can't just click PK Fire over and over again?
Well, I mean, if you play Ness, you can't really.
And Jake's world comes crashing.
Yeah. you know, a lot of character matchup knowledge that is so different from VGC in a way that I didn't expect. I thought, oh, this is a game that's way more based on merit than Pokemon, when in reality, I think that it's more just, I really do think it's like how well you can apply this wealth of information to your execution. And I don't feel like I lose to people that are smarter than me. I feel like I lose to people that are just more, like, just veterans, and I don't feel like that happens to me as much in Pokemon. And I think that the better I got at the game, actually, the more I realized how far I would still have to go. Because once I started understanding why I was losing to a kid that was ranked in my region, even though it was close, like, and I'd watch the VOD back and I'd be like, yeah, I can't believe he's paying attention to all these little things. Like, I would have to take months to learn to do that. Mm-hmm. So it scared me, and like, it's more just that I know that I wouldn't be able to put the type of time into it to get the result that I want, because I'm very competitive and I'd want to be, you know, the best in my region. And it's just, it's so exhausting. And I could play for 4 hours a day or maybe even more, but I work and I go to school. So it's very arduous. but what I did pick up from that game was genuinely my thought process in general of, like, kind of everything in my life is just much faster. You just kind of get accustomed to having to think really quickly. I think that my being under pressure, I make better decisions still. And I think that rigorous training and, like, kind of camaraderie of enjoying the game that you're playing kind of transitioned over. I feel like that was something I was missing when I was playing Ultra Series. I wasn't enjoying Pokemon. Yeah, I was just trying to win.
No one was in Ultra Series.
And that leads me to my next point, like, what really brought me back. Outside of, you know, a baseline, I actually really just like the VGC community more. It's a lot more mature people, a lot more, I should say, people that are just more individual than Smash. I feel like Smash as a whole has a lot of collectivism. And I don't want to throw shade at anybody or, like, you know, say that the community overall has problems, but, you know, being that a lot of it is much younger or developed in that community much younger without adult supervision, they kind of developed in a way that I don't feel comfortable around genuinely. I would go to majors and I would meet people and I'd just be like, where are your parents and who raised you? And, you know, you start playing money matches, and I'm like, yo, this kid was definitely a Smash 4 Bayonetta main. And he was like, how did you know? So, but specifically, like, outside of just the community level, like, I miss the people. Like, I cannot stress enough. Like, I'm so much more forgiving of the things that people do on, like, social media now. Like, I'm like, oh, you guys don't even come close to the Smash stuff that I've seen.
That's bad. I feel like we get bad sometimes. Yeah. Maybe it's just my perception.
Look, the stuff that that I saw and experienced in my short time in Ultimate.
Man, I don't even want
to
know.
I cannot. I wouldn't even be able to talk about it on the podcast. That's how bad it is. So
this is I was going to say, this is a safe for work podcast.
Yeah, definitely not. but what's it called? The real thing is the format. Like, I'm going to go into why Dynamaxing specifically actually brought me back, like, the hardest. Because I think that...
That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, well, I think people are looking at it so wrong. And, like, I'm not going to... I actually am working on a project that is going to really, really, really deep dive into this, because I might be the biggest Dynamax fan in all of VGC right now.
That's, a big claim, but...
I know, right. And you know, honestly, like, you know that meme where it's like, I hated Jesus because he was right, or he told the truth. I'm telling you, by the end of the format, people will see what I'm talking about. Right now, I can't stress enough, I went 7-3 at Dallas, and I had more fun in that regional than I did in, like, a couple years of VGC combined.
Wow.
I really enjoy playing the game. I think that there's so many quality of life changes that have been added in, but specifically Dynamax has brought, like, this level of balance that I don't think we've ever seen. And I know that people think that it's kind of like, you know, pull the trigger and let it rip and then just see who comes out in the end. But if you're looking at it like that, I think that that's a little short-sighted. There's so many things that Dynamax has done for stat control and board positioning, and specifically the removal of fake out being broken. Has lended itself to, like, the overall health of the game. And that, in tandem with stuff like dynamic speed changes being a thing, which people were like, oh my goodness, this is so crazy at first, I can't believe this is happening. I don't want to have my weather abuser to just destroy my opponent anymore. I don't have a matchup advantage. That's a good thing. It's a good thing that you can...
I think that speed change is so good.
I think it's cool that you can Icy Wind with a fast Pokemon and then you can outspeed it with something slow. There's so that dynamic speed changes make so much of a difference.
It's way more interactive now.
Exactly. And specifically with things like Dragapult, right? And think about in the past, if you had Prankster or Tailwind with Dragapult, you would not be able to really match that. Or even just, like, you wouldn't be able to really match Dragapult's speed in general without, like, using speed control or Dragapult itself. There's very few Scarfers that, like, have the base stats to even knock out Max Dynamax. Dynamax Dragapult. So specifically being able to set your own Tailwind, something like that, and then outspeed something like a Dragapult. It's a little bit of a muddy way of putting it. But specifically the access to the slight nerf to Fake Out has, you know, really made it so that you can do a lot more. I think it makes people play better Pokemon. I know that sounds, it's different. It's a different type of Pokemon. But back in, like, VGC 17, where the Fake Out users weren't too great, we didn't see a lot of Fake Out. And we saw a lot of really interactive gameplay where, you know, you were bored, you were switching very often, or you were trying to utilize your Z-move properly. And there's so many things I love about Dynamax. I'm going to sound like a school kid right now, but it lends itself to offense being better and defense being better. Like, it didn't make offense more broken than it made defense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The ability.
I think part of that's because some of the defensive ones are just, like, on the best types.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job of balancing that. Like, I don't know how they selected. I don't really know that they could have, you know, foreseen, like, you know, graphs of, like, this Pokemon is going to be much better than this because it has access to max steel or whatever. But I think specifically, you know, not making the attack boosting stuff too broken, like the fighting and poison,
that could have gotten out of hand.
I was shocked by the foresight of that, to be honest.
I know.
I was that too. Seems like something that historically would have fallen through the cracks in, like, balancing. So
they did so much to balance this format. Like, there's so many things that, like, you just probably, like, I was gonna make, like, a VGC 20 appreciation thread, but I didn't want my mentions to blow up for the rest of the day. So one of the things I was thinking, I was like, well, they got rid of Skydrop, so they made Trick Room, like, Hard Trick Room, like, a viable archetype, which is cool. Like, even though I don't really enjoy playing against Hard Trick Room, I think it's cool that they made a whole archetype, like, viable by getting rid of a move. They got rid of, or they added abilities to the game, like Stalwart, which is great because, like, redirection is kind of broken. And being able to ignore that is really cool with a Pokemon with a really good move pool. As you saw, it ended up winning a regional.
Right.
And then there's like, there's definitely some things that they kind of missed. I think that they accidentally made weakness policy ridiculously broken. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because weakness policy is arguably one of the most versatile items for team building probably ever added to the game. In terms of like how you can create compositions around it.
Yeah.
And secondarily, I think that the when I was talking about stat control, like stuff like max flying and max steel spike are really, really cool for team building, because now you can build things where it's like, all right, I can go a little bit slower and then, you know, maybe max airstream and be fine. Or I could go a little bit less physically bulky on my Milo and then have max steel spike to buff up its defenses. And so that's just like really added this whole new layer of like team building, you know, of game planning. And I think it makes it so it's like, you know, usually they add something, some crazy mechanic like Mega Evolution. It's like, oh, the whole game has to revolve around beating Mega Kangaskhan. Whereas with Dynamax, everything got Dynamax. Everything got max moves. So now you have so many different options to combat all the stuff that is so oppressive.
Do you, so like, kind of tying this back to what you were mentioning about Smash and how all the different things you have to know at any given point, like while you're playing, do you kind of liken like the way more possibilities that can happen on any given turn with Dynamax to some of those different things you have to know in Smash, like, you know, stage positioning, frame data, etc.? Like, does the ability to apply those things at a given point in a battle or in a like a game of Smash, are those comparable to each other? Or are they like not at all?
Yes, in one way specifically, I think that the ability, like, it kind of feels like I'm actually playing my opponent now, not just a matchup. I feel like VGC has always been, if it's always been what we could call maybe two dimensional, Dynamax brought it to the third dimension. Like, I really don't think it's even appreciated enough. The extra hit points make it so that you can take like offensive stuff and then survive attacks and then get two whole turns out of your offense, which in Pokemon, a whole turn is so huge. You know, in card games, if you could stop your opponent from moving for an entire turn, people think that card is broken. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Pokemon is just like a card game where your whole deck is in your hands and you guys play the cards at the same time. You know, being able to get extra turns, like, there's so much value that you can create and so much value that your opponent can create and vice versa. You can take it away. And that's just this whole new level. You're not just on an X and Y axis anymore. There's now a Z axis or a Dynamaxis.
Oh, my God.
That was off the dome. That was off the dome. I didn't write that down.
Ew.
All right,
that's it. We're going to end the podcast here.
I'm sure people will give me the dad joke treatment on that one.
But I'm sure there'll be at least one person that tweets at you.
Yeah.
And I could probably tell you who it's going to be. Anyway.
Gavin Michaels.
So he doesn't listen to this. You mentioned that you were working with Wolf and Aaron a little bit, and it seems kind of like I read through Aaron's report yesterday a little bit, that you guys, at least, you know, somewhat far in advance, relative to like making the team the day before, had at least some kind of idea and practice with what you guys were going to bring. And personally, being somebody that doesn't, you know, tend to get teams until pretty close to the event, how do you like practice or prepare differently when you know what team you're going to be bringing to the tournament as opposed to like team building up until the last minute?
All right. So I actually don't know that I'm at liberty to say. I didn't sign an NDA or anything,
feel free to, you know, like, we're not...
I'm just going to try...
Like, say what you're comfortable saying.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to have to think about this. So, like, the one thing I want to say is that I definitely function so much better when I'm in a positive environment. And I have been in, a numerous amount of team-building groups, and I've worked with so many different people in VGC. And been a part of, you know, some really fun teams, or even just like small little changes to really good teams that I didn't have too much of an impact in. And, you know, sometimes people really get aggressive and mm-hmm. and mean about the way that they look look at your stuff.
Drag them.
I won't name a specific person, and I don't think that I honestly don't think that it's always intentional. I think that a lot of people there's a huge sense of pride in the way that people build, and you know, it's kind of almost like your child. So like I understand it. There's a huge connection to what your work. But I think that some people are so quick to write off what you do.
It's defensive. Yeah,
and
it can be defensive.
I cannot stress enough that, like, how I mean, I'm going to get emotional thinking about it because it's actually, you know, it made my life better for the time being when I was building this team. Like literally, like it that's how much of a change of the positivity was that Aaron and Wolf are. I cannot give them enough praise in terms of like, it felt like, you know, they were like. Like we were like a functioning family, like a really healthy unit where if you had an idea, they would ask you instead of even if they thought it was bad, right? Instead of asking, or just saying it's bad, they would ask you why it's good. And they would ask you to prove it, like kind of like in a trial. And that kind of just created this really positive atmosphere where it's like, all right, if I'm the one realizing that my idea is bad through, you know, trial and error or because I can't justify it, it's a lot better than somebody being like, no, it's bad. You're bad.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And that was one thing that I really loved. Also, another thing that I really loved was just how much fun we had. Like, I can't tell you, like, the jokes and all the things that we talked about and some of the really dumb things that we did try. Like, being that they were – sometimes, like, if they couldn't prove that an idea was bad, right, we would just, like, you know, test it. And it would be like, all right, now we know it's bad. And like, that's fun. Cause it's like, you remember the version of the team that was so bad, or you remember the thing that you tested that was just really weak. And sometimes you'd end up revisiting stuff and it'd be like, oh, you explore it in a new way. And it actually was really, really good. And specifically, I think the thing that actually applies to the most is Jellicent. Going more defensive with Jellicent, ended up being, way less potent for the team, than if we were to have the Tailwind option. So, like literally just that one change where it's like, oh, well, we can outspeed Arcanine and Tailwind. That's crazy. And we can click Waterspout. Can we afford to go more offensive? Yes. Wow, that changes everything. And instead of it being like, oh, no, our regional team is falling apart, it's like, oh, my goodness, this is busted. One of us is going to win this thing. And like, I genuinely think that from like start to finish, we all thought one of us was going to win. And I can't stress enough, you know, I'm so happy that it was Aaron. He was super deserving and he played phenomenally. And you know, these guys, like, really, I love them to death. And they made the whole team building process amazing. They made the regional so much fun to be at. And obviously I missed cut by one game. And a very, very tough regional. So I wasn't, you know, I was disappointed that I couldn't do the team justice more than I was in, you know, the actual performance itself. I think that the people that I played that beat me really outplayed me, so I don't really have any qualms with that. And just to wrap that whole like thought process or that whole like, you know, segment up is that I'm really just happy with the way that the team ended up being built. The whole group was great. We tested stuff in best of threes against each other sometimes and we ladded a little bit. But yeah, it's kind of just like, I think that genuinely keeping an open mind with the people that you work with is just so good. And it's like, it's a broken team building strategy, literally.
I feel like it's a broken strategy, like in life, just generally keeping an open mind.
Yeah. Let's pump the brakes here.
Just okay. For real. This isn't a philosophy podcast. Yeah. Well, super. Yeah. It's really cool to hear. Obviously there was a lot of time and work that went into this team and it clearly worked for Aaron. And you know, it's good to hear that you and Wolf both enjoyed it as well. So, really cool conversation we just had, I believe. I'm about to wrap it up, but I think it's time for you to ask us your question that you have prepared for us, Justin, as we always like to have our guests do.
All right. So I would like to know, with this question that I definitely wrote down and had prepared to ask.
I wouldn't have called you on it.
What do you guys think is the next step for the metagame?
Ooh. For the metagame.
Yeah, because I think that, and like kind of just to elaborate on that question a little bit, I think that a lot of people are really scared that this stuff is going to go in the wrong direction. Scope Lens, Togekiss, you know, Paralysis with Grimmsnarl.
Yeah.
I think it definitely has a lot of potential. I mean, Butterfree, there's a lot of potential for things to go the wrong way, but I think that this metagame needs to be pushed in a specific direction. Which direction do you think that guy's is?
A couple of things that I took away from the regional, and I'm sorry, just as a disclaimer here, we are recording this before the second half, before the first half, so if we end up doubling down on things, I'm sorry. But some of the biggest things that I took away from the regional were that obviously, like, Aaron in the finals, like he outplayed Bing G, right? And the thing that kind of scared me was seeing that, like, Durant is so strong and arguably has a lower skill cap to play. So to be able to, like, pull that much power out of Amon and, like, not really have, because it even looks like at times, like, Bing G had plays that he could have made against Aaron and kind of run away with the game. So
absolutely. The power, I mean, watching that game, I was like, oh man.
Yeah. like one step out of line and you're going to get rockfall.
Yeah.
Rockfallen. Anyway, I think that kind of team where you can create so much offense is scary and can be scarier arguably than the team that you guys ran, because you can put it in much less skilled hands and still get similar results. So that scares me. And I think that we might see, you know, more strategies dedicated to just like putting a lot of power into one Pokemon. And the other thing that I got from the regional was Fake Tears. Fake Tears, Grimmsnarl, and Fake Tears, Whimsicott are absolutely terrifying.
It was on six out of the top eight teams.
Yeah.
Wait, Fake Tears is on six of eight top eight teams?
It's difficult to play against.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can just get nuked by absolutely anything. Yeah. So I'm definitely scared of that. And I think that the other thing, and this is less specific, is that people are going to find a way to get more out of their early games than matching Airstream.
Yeah.
Which we saw quite a bit. I think it's a matter of time until, you know, you find a more foolproof Trick Room setter or fall back on Paralysis or use G-Max Pikachu.
Stop.
or stuff like that to try and, you know, have a better handle on early games.
Those games definitely, like, they fell prey to the fact that they didn't have, like, ways to immediately get rid of Togekiss.
Right, yeah. I think support Togekiss is underrated. Everybody is, like, addicted to critting the Starfall.
I think one thing that generally does well against these like super strong offense teams is Trick Room, and I was kind of surprised to not see like more of it. Like, I know Aaron won with it, and there were other teams that had it on stream and in cut, but I feel like, you know, hard Trick Room is something that always pops up in like the beginning of format, so we did have some of that in Germany for sure, but it didn't really show up much in Dallas, and that kind of surprised me. So I wouldn't be surprised to see more, like, even like teams with dedicated Trick Room modes, necessarily hard Trick Room overall, but like teams that can make good use of Trick Room.
I think that the problem there is that the abusers are a little bit weak. I think that the fact that Rhyperior is the most common like Trick Room abuser is actually bad, because when you think about it, right, Togekiss is the best Follow Me user, and Duraludon is the best answer to hard Trick Room, and now you have to choose between maybe missing getting Follow Me in the Max Quake, or, you know, targeting a Duraludon with Max Rockfall. So yeah, I think that actually
you have to play around,
like, really reduces the potency of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, final segment, as always, is music. No matter how many times Brendan tries to forget and push it out, I will never let that happen.
I did again this week.
This week, I've been listening to an album by the band St. Lucia called Hyperion a lot, and it's really cool. One song that you may have heard is called China Shop. That's the only one I had heard before I listened to the entire album, but I like it a lot. They're kind of poppy, but like not to a fault. So it's fun. I enjoy it.
And you can be poppy to a fault. That's true. I think I've listened to the group, but I'm not sure I'm like directly familiar with the album that you mentioned. I feel like I've talked about it the last couple weeks, but I'm falling down like an indie pop hole, which is something that I haven't done before, so it's really exciting. There's like a lot of new music to listen to, and the artist that I've been listening to most recently is called Verite. I'm like still making my way through it, so I'm not going to pull an album or anything, but. Yeah, and I'm actually really excited for Justin's answer, too, because I know he's a music head.
I've been kind of diving back into the 90s a little bit.
Ah, yes.
I'm a big Interpol fan.
Okay.
And they have an amazing, amazing album called Turn on the Bright Lights. And the song Obstacle One has kind of just been like on repeat for me. I think I just get really emotional when I listen to that song. if you like the Killers, they're kind of like the group that they got their style from. Mm-hmm. So very kind of reminiscent of that sound. And I mean, I would guess, you know, if I could recommend any other artists from that era, definitely listen to Julian Casablancas, one of the best singers of his generation.
I love him.
So he has a couple groups, but that's it for me, really.
That's awesome. Those are really good. The 90s are an era that I get in trouble for going back to too much, I think. So I'm glad it didn't have to be me.
With
this
who?
Week.
Who gives you trouble for that?
I don't know. It's just kind of like, oh, why don't you listen to some new music? Like, you're always listening to this old stuff.
Why would I change?
Arguably the same argument that I gave to my mom when I was growing up. So, I mean, like, it's just full circle. I just feel like I'm going to start saying, okay, boomer, to people that yell at me about that.
Look, if you had a great relationship, people wouldn't tell you that about your partner, you know? It's not like, oh, you have this great partner. Why don't you try something else out? So
that's true. It's a
relationship with music, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now I have all the ammo. I'm just gonna stop listening to not the 90s.
I'm a professional boomer comeback guy, so because everybody at my job is like over the age of 40. So
I was gonna say, as if
I'm 40. Yes,
that's a rabbit hole I could go down. Anyway, that's gonna wrap up the second half of our show. So Justin, big thanks for coming on. I think we talked about quite a bit there, and it was really interesting, especially for me as somebody who. I think you mentioned like earlier in your career, you just kind of wing it. I'm not past that yet. I do wing it. So to get an impression about, you know, team building groups and how to actually, you know, prepare in a positive way is definitely something that's good to me and hopefully for the viewers as well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, man. I actually had a pleasure going over all that stuff. So if anybody would ever like to, you know, hear about this stuff, actually feel free to just, you know, hit me up about it. Ask me about it on Twitter or in person. Even I'm totally down for just talking about it. So.
Yeah, and we'll have Justin's Twitter handle, I believe, in the description.
Yes.
Do we do that? Yeah, we do that. So if you do want to talk to Justin on Twitter, that's a good place. Obviously, there are plenty of other resources available. RVGC is really taking off and is an awesome place. So any sorts of places that you want to get in touch with people about team building, or if you do want to talk to Justin again, his handle will be in the description. So Justin, thanks again for coming on. Jake and I are going to take a short break and return sans Justin, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, and thanks for staying with us through segment 3 of our podcast this week. We are no longer joined by Justin Karras, but I'm still joined by Jake Mueller. So thanks for coming by for episode 15. I feel like this was a really like meat and potatoes episode.
Right.
You know, we talked a lot about there's a lot of Pokemon discussion, right? Whereas in times past, we've kind of departed from that a little bit. But a lot of Pokemon going on. We're in the thick of, you know, our format here, and you know, talk about Pokemon is you know, why we started this podcast. So good week.
Yeah, definitely. We got into some pretty cool topics with Justin. Stuff that like everyone can learn from. Like, there's no one that's like the perfect team builder or the perfect at preparing for tournaments. So like any perspective that you can gain from someone else, I think is really cool. So hopefully everyone got some good stuff out of this one.
I did. I certainly did.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Yeah.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 16, and we will have some... Are there regionals between then and now, or is it, like, that weekend?
No, not till Collinsville.
Okay. Well, in 2 weeks is the doubleheader MSS, though, so you'll get to hear our voices some more if you... Yeah. Or is that 3 weeks? That's 3 weeks.
It's 3 weeks from now. Whoops.
Time is a flat circle. So anyway, the point being that there are events coming up. And we'll make sure that we are keeping tabs on, at the very least, the big ones for you. And if we are lacking big ones, we've got a whole database of PCs and mid-seasons that we can pull from, thanks to Zach, who we spoke with during our last episode. So that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be going live on Friday, as per usual. And as per usual, if you want to get in touch with Jake or I, please feel free to find us on Twitter. Our Twitter names will be in the bio. And we're always looking for feedback and things of that nature. So until we meet again, Thanks for listening to Soundproof, and good luck on your tournaments this weekend.